Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, ladies. I'm Sam Sylvia, and this is GLOW.
Sorry, what's GLOW?
Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? What?
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
At the Movies on BFM 89.9.
I'm Umar Park and I'm PK Park, and alongside Ian McNally and Bahir Yusuf, there is a brand new series that premiered on Netflix last week. It's called GLOW, or The Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. It's a 30-minute, 10-episode series starring Alison Brie as Ruth Wilder, Betty Gilpin as Debbie Egan, Mark Maron as Sam Sylvia, and it's produced by Jenji Cohen, who you would know from Weeds, and of course, Orange is the New Black. And it's created by Liz Flavey and Carly Mensch. And apparently they got this idea from a real documentary, a 2012 documentary called GLOW, The Story of the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. And they were inspired to make a TV series about it. It's not factual. The TV series is fictional, but it's based at a point in history where there was a ladies' wrestling organization in the vein of WWF back in the day, and WCW.
Yeah, the first one.
The first one, exactly. What do you guys think of this TV series? Because I was binging like you wouldn't believe.
It does feel very much... I watched a bit of Orange is the New Black, and it kind of feels like a little bit like Orange is the New Black again. In a way, just like, we're going to get some women and put them in one space and have them there all the time. In a good way. But I did feel...
But lighter as well.
But a hell of a lot lighter, yes. Yeah, yeah, you're not getting shivved in the toilet. But I think at first I found that it was weird. Netflix now, because of the way it releases these things, I was like, hurry up for the first two episodes. Like, I wasn't quite on board at first. It was only... And I think it's the rule of threes or fours, right? For Netflix?
Yeah.
Episode three or four is where they really got you at that point. And it got me by that.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, I think, well, first off, I think Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling is such an 80s name. It's amazing, right?
There is so much neon in the show.
Oh, gosh.
And even someone I saw on Twitter found, Wrestling Reddit found that the, you don't see the opening credits much, I think, after the first episode, right?
Netflix skips them. I wanted to talk about this very quickly before we get into our review. That's very cunning as well. Netflix knows how you're going to watch
this.
Yeah. So they only show you the opening credits at the first episode, then after that, it's just a card that flashes GLOW.
Yeah. And I think they've updated their system so that it used to show the credits for a little bit longer. Now it's like, we're playing the next one in 5 seconds.
Exactly.
Yes, now it's really quick.
It's really quick.
Yeah.
Because I was like, what?
Yeah. I thought I pressed pause. Yeah. I thought I pressed pause, but I didn't. So I'm going to have to hold it in for the next half hour.
Yeah. But some wrestling fan noticed that the first time you see the credits, there is, like, they have ladies wrestling, but they're neon outlined. It's actually from a wrestling match from the WWE or WWF back in the day.
Wow.
They put together a GIF comparing the two. Like, it's like just bouncing off the rope and spinning it down. So the internet is ridiculous.
People have far too much time on their hands. But hey, if you're like me, a child of the 80s who grew up watching wrestling, there are so many Easter eggs in this for you. You will love this if you enjoy WWF or WCW as it was back then before it became WWE. And yeah, and there is these great homages. But what's more, I found that it wasn't a show that was rooted in homages. It's very much its own show with really well-developed, defined characters and people that you enjoy. I mean, Betty Gilpin's character of Debbie Egan and Liberty Bell.
Yeah.
I love her. I think she's absolutely fantastic.
Because she's awful.
Yeah. No, but as an actor as well, the way she balances this dynamic between being a mother, a wrestler, someone who's been betrayed, all of these things. I mean, there's no overacting on her part.
No.
This is a TV series that is supposed to be hammy.
It's supposed to be melodrama. But it's only melodrama in the ring. Outside the ring, yeah. It's not.
Right.
Yeah. But she's an awful cow to most of the other characters. They're like, she steals her character off somebody else. You know,
she's a soap star.
She's a soap star. She's constantly asking for more than everybody else. Yeah. Like, she's kind of, both her and Alison Brie are playing characters that it's hard to like. And at certain points, I was in mid-cringe at something Alison Brie was doing, probably one of her zany accents.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I don't know how much of this I can watch because it's starting to veer into Office territory. And I just, you know, start compacting upon myself. And then it just hits me. It takes an awful lot of talent to be able to do that and make me want to see what happens to that character after that.
Yeah. And I agree. I think in a lot of ways, I found Marc Maron's character the most interesting. I wanted to watch his story. I wanted to watch his journey. And the Betty Gilpin character, the Alison Brie character, just almost feels, I wouldn't say side characters, but like, I like the Marc Maron storyline.
Yeah.
And I think as a character, he plays it very well. He plays that almost jaded / down on his luck, on his last leg, alcoholic, druggy, which you see a lot of throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Womanizer. But still very lovable. Like, there's heart there somewhere.
There's a certain level where it's a one-note performance in that he doesn't really, no matter how bad things get, he'll always get another packet of cigarettes or some more coke and keep going. And no matter how good things get, he's always get an idea that it's going to go awful again.
Yeah.
So he isn't kind of, like, even when he's having an argument with the producer, he's animated, but it's not like you get the feeling that he's really, like, this is going to bum out that much. He's still going to go home to his couch and sit there and give out about his ex-wife.
Yes.
And that's his baseline.
Yeah.
And I've talked, I think, to both of you before maybe about, I have huge problems with Marc Maron's personality on his podcast. Like, I subscribe and unsubscribe from that on a weekly basis because I can't handle the 15 minutes of ads at the beginning and just some of the way he just talks about it and everything. But I was in love with him and his character in this from the moment he turned up.
Yeah, I completely agree with you because people keep telling me about Marc Maron's podcast, and every time I listen in, I get turned off.
Yeah.
So when he first shows up, I didn't know he was in it.
Yeah.
When he first shows up, I'm like, oh God, I'm going to hate this right off the bat. But then no. And I think it's his one-note performance balances off the other sort of zany characters.
Because everyone's zany.
Everybody else is really crazy.
Yeah, at the core of this TV series are all of these women who are auditioning for a wrestling TV show. And this is what's really clever about the show. It's incredibly self-aware that they're not just making a TV show about a wrestling series. They're aware themselves that they're making a TV show about the making of a TV show about a wrestling series.
Yeah, it's almost like a mockumentary. Who is it that does those?
It's the Spinal Tap. Mockumentaries, right? Only this one takes itself seriously.
Yeah. And so, also, these women are auditioning for this because they literally can't get any other jobs.
They have nothing else in their lives. A lot of them are outcasts from society. And at the core, this is a show about all of these women that learn to come together and kind of support each other, right? Mm. That's that overarching message that we see a little bit of in Orange is the New Black as well.
In this, like, no matter how their personas are going off against each other as nemesis in the ring, they all have to work together. Otherwise, it doesn't look like wrestling.
Yeah.
Like, the way that when they start learning how to throw people, and it's like, it's not that, you know, the person doing the throwing is actually doing the throwing.
Yeah.
It's the person being thrown who does all the work and how they learn to lead each other. And
make the other person look good.
Yes.
You know, I mean, yeah, there's, you can read into those metaphors however you want about sisterhood and all of that stuff. But that's what's cool about the show in that they never break that tension between entertainment and exploitation.
They never break kayfabe.
Yes. But no, that tension between entertainment and exploitation gets to a real fever pitch at one point when they're at their producer's house and he gets them costumes.
Oh, yeah.
And it's incredible because the Arab-looking one is the terrorist.
Even though she's Indian.
Even though she's Indian, right?
And the English one who's supposed to be the brain puts on an astronaut helmet and says, look, I'm a beekeeper. Who, I had to look this up, that's Kate Nash. She was a singer in the UK in 2009, 2013.
Right.
Two That's albums out. Foundation, I think, was her song. Because she was freaking me out because she looks like one of Bridget Jones's friends. She's got that kind of pointy chin. That, you know that girl I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And with the accent as well, I was like, she's got to be American the way she's doing that accent.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no.
She's actually British.
She actually talks
And
like
in
that.
The TV show, she's Britannica.
Yes.
The smartest woman in the world.
Yeah, and she's definitely not.
Are you hiring actors to play wrestlers, or are we the wrestlers?
Go!
Yes.
Woo! Christ. Fucking actresses.
Okay, I want you to meet the star of GLOW, Debbie Egan.
Are you insane? Why is she here?
She's the alpha and you're the omega. Submit. She might kill you.
Oh. The 80s references are plenty in this TV series.
There's so much hairspray used in this movie.
And I know we've complained a lot about 80s references in film and television, but Netflix seems to be getting it right with this one, with Stranger Things. You know, it isn't just a flashy homage, right?
It's not just a couple of shoulder pad suits.
Exactly. Yeah. It's integral to the plot and the setting of this, and everyone seems invested in it.
I think it's also that idea that the time period with Stranger Things and if we GLOW, it's the setting, right? It changes the entire dynamics, right?
You have no mobile phones. You can't just call
exactly,
to get help.
Right? So there's a difference. You can't call an Uber. You can't call a Lyft. All these things all make... So then they fall into the story. They become challenges that someone who didn't grow up in the 80s can't think of.
I had to explain what the video dating was to somebody.
There you go.
Yeah.
What did you guys think about the relationship between Debbie and Ruth? So the two main characters played by Alison Brie and Betty Gilpin.
I mean, it's the heart of the story.
I loved it. I thought it was really well done because something happens between the two characters. I won't ruin the twist for you guys. Something happens between two characters and they have a falling out. And I love how that falling out is played throughout these 10 episodes. Mm. It's easy to want to resolve that and get things moving along. But there is no...
There's no need to. You've got 10
exactly.
episodes. And I think something that helps this... Was Stranger Things 30 minutes long as well?
No,
I know it was longer.
45-50.
And I think 45-50 has hurt some of the Marvel shows where it's like you could cut an hour or two off some of those.
I'm so happy with the 35-minute runtime.
Yeah,
it just burns through, right? Yeah. The heart, it does start off, it is Ruth's story, it is Alison Brie's story, and it kind of does feel a little bit like Annie Edison's mom from Community.
Yeah.
It really does feel like it's that character. I mean, it's Alison Brie, I don't know whether they wrote it around her or they got her contribution, because she is almost the exact same character as she was in Community. Over-enthusiastic, overachieving, but also incredibly like lacking in confidence.
Yeah, but I think in Community, she's more naive. So in that sense, yeah, you're right. Yeah. It almost feels like Annie's mom, you know, where she's slightly wilder, whereas Annie in Community is a little more naive.
She's Annie who had a rougher time of it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but it's such a strong performance because she's a simpering mess, and otherwise I would... I would hate that character.
Yeah.
I would find that character so annoying, but I think there is a charm to her simperingness.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the Annie Edison, that's the element of that. Yeah. They're keeping it that balance just right, I think, because they know Alison Brie can play that.
And I think as well, like, if anybody else wouldn't have worked, right? Yeah. The way she constantly just comes in with like, I've got a new character.
And they're awful.
I'm gonna do this. And they're terrible. So even when they're terrible, on Alison Brie, it looks adorable. On anybody else, it just looks like groveling or like apple polishing, right? The way she's constantly trying to get on Mac Maron's good graces.
And the way he constantly shuts her down. Just like, it's a beautiful relationship that just slowly builds. Again, with the shorter running time and the large number of characters, everything just gets enough. You know what I mean? It's not a story about her and Marc Maron. It's a little bit more the story between her and Betty Gilpin's character. But, you know, in a way, that's where I get the little predictability element comes of it, where you can see, like, in season 3, we're going to find out more about Sheila the She-Wolf.
Yes. Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, it is very much setting, well, here's some interesting characters and we can add to this if we GLOW to 6 seasons and a movie.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't mind that so much because, you know, I watch Game of Thrones and, you know, there's still stuff about the Starks that we have no idea about.
Yeah.
And we're still discovering in season 6 and season 7, right? So I don't mind that. And the predictability is interesting because, yes, some of the twists that happen are incredibly predictable, but I think you like these characters so much that you're along for the ride.
Yeah.
And that's some pretty solid writing to be able to do it in 35 minutes over 10 episodes and still be that rounded.
And I think there's a point at the end where they set up things to go one way in the wrestling and then it goes another way in the wrestling.
And that is the ultimate thing for the WWE, WWF fan, right? Because that's what we love.
The heel turn or whatever.
Yeah. So good.
But then I'm sure if there's probably like if we do three more watches, we can probably start drawing lines and doing like, you know, Inception level graphs of like, because the story of the characters then does the same thing.
Yeah.
Because you can't have it all neatly tied up in a bow. It's got to be, there's one line which just tells what's going to happen. Like there's still room to go.
Yeah.
This isn't the end of the story.
Yeah. There's enough set up for, I think, significant stories in season two as well, with each one of those characters we've met along the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I have to call out as well, there's some brilliant moments. At first, I wasn't clear if this is a comedy or not, because the first couple are kind of grim. But when it gets going and the comedy really starts to kick in, when Marc Maron is being in it more, and there's Bashir Salahuddin's character, Keith, the referee wrestler. Some of the moments with him where he's in the ring and he's trying to wrestle, but he's no idea what's going on, and he's looking angry at one person, and he's like, I don't know what you're doing, but this looks great. Do you know where this goes next?
Yeah.
And I just found that absolutely hilarious.
And the relationship between him and his wife is the sweetest thing ever.
Yes.
Yes. I was going to say, I like the fact that you know, Uma, you mentioned how the Alison Brie character and the Betty Gilpin character, it could have been easily that they could have very easily sort of got back together, right? They could have worked it out and then just moved on. And I think the fact that they didn't makes the characters a lot more interesting, because not only do they're essentially no longer friends, but then they've become colleagues. So they have to work together. They have to sort of put aside the personal problem to keep, you know, what's working in the ring working. And I think that bit,
that complexity,
of not just like, oh, two episodes later, let's, you know, oh yeah, I'm sorry, let's move on. And I like that they didn't just wipe that under the table.
I mean, that's the core conflict of the show, I think.
Yeah,
they can't, when they get to the point where they're almost resolved on that, something's gonna happen.
Yeah. Also, fans of the 1980s cartoon Transformers the movie,
I was gonna mention this.
I was gonna say, there's a little treat for you.
Yeah,
there's a little treat for you.
That was like, my ears perked, like, huh?
What? Wait, is it?
Wait, I mean, I know they're doing the 80s pastiche thing, but like, huh? This song. And we won't give it away, but it's not the one you think it is.
It's the other one.
So obscure.
So
there's a little point they play theme from, I had to look this up, theme from Exodus.
They do. Huh?
And I'm like, why is, apparently that music's used in everything. That's where I've heard it from. Because I don't think I've ever seen the movie Exodus.
No, there are so many little Easter eggs and treats for anyone who loves the 80s or grew up in that era. Check out Glow. It's streaming on Netflix right now. 10 episodes, 30 minutes each, and incredibly bingeable. If you do catch it, tweet us and tell us what you think. I'm on at Uma Pagan.
I'm on at McNasty Prime.
I'm at Bahewai.
You've been listening to At the Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.